This is Fanboy Versus, episode 154, the late summer 2015 super special. I am Brian Kilby, and with me I have the hosts of Fanboy Versus, Nicole Hale, Chris McFeely, and Chris Triplett. Folks, it's been a while. It's been a few months. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm on the auto assembly come down.
I'm sorry.
I'm with you, bud. With you.
Oh, weak brofist.
I'm too old to party like that. It's been 5 years since I went to my last auto assembly, and 5 years makes a difference. I'm just like, I'm too old for this.
Yeah, at BotCon, most of the partying involved me sitting in the hotel room and Don over in the hot tub across the way, uncomfortably talking to 17-year-old girls. That was the most partying that happened.
That sounds like some what? Kind of party.
Yeah, it was pretty great. I love hanging out with Don. Don and I live like 2 hours apart from each other. We never see each other outside of these conventions, and that's probably a good thing. I'm kidding. But yeah, I don't get that feeling with BotCon. It's like, oh, thank God I'm home.
Oh, no. I mean, Nicole, you had to leave earlier, didn't you, on Sunday? When I say earlier.
No, I left 4 a.m. Monday morning.
Yeah, that's when I went to bed Monday morning. So.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
I feel like there was a pretty strong chance I would have felt less like hot garbage the next morning if I had actually stayed up all night.
Yeah, because I stayed up for when I finally landed home, because I didn't sleep on the plane. It was practically impossible. I was up for about 50 hours, I'd say.
Jeez. Wow. Wow.
Yes, hence why I'm still recovering.
Well,
yeah.
TFCon USA is October 16th through 18th. If anybody wants to go, I'll be there.
God, that's getting really close. Really close.
Party.
I want to go so bad. I will probably go the Saturday if I can do it. It'll be Saturday.
You are not missing this. I will kick your ass.
I know.
If you do not make this, it's an hour from your house.
I know.
I
have things. Is the problem?
Oh, I will pay Kilby to come and kick your ass, Triplett. If you don't make it.
Okay.
Yeah, you're going to be there.
You got to go.
Be hanging out with Don. So I got Triplett and Don together for dinner one night when Don came down for a trip to whatever it was, TFCon last year, and the universe didn't implode. So
it was awkward as hell also.
Yeah, I know.
He's like, here's this guy that's a voice to me. That was essentially all he was. Now he's in a room with me. It's really weird.
So I've introduced basically Don to all of my friends sans like one person. So...
I've met Don.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard the story. It was at Universal or something, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, are you guys reading anything right now? Everything I read, except for the Transformers books, are kind of on hold because of I don't read DC anymore. Because screw that.
I've got nothing left from DC.
I don't either. Sadly.
I buy books from DC, but I don't know if I read them.
The RFC minicast that I did this past week with John and Matt was about why we don't read DC anymore.
So here's the sad thing. Like, all of you admit that you don't read DC anymore, yet all I'm hearing now is that what they're doing now is working. But I haven't read any of them.
I mean,
like,
I
heard their Superman's working. I heard their Batman's working, despite the crazy idea that it is. I heard that... There's something else. What Batgirl is supposed to be working? And...
Well, that's it. I mean, they went for this big push of more diverse titles and things, which is certainly to be applauded. But I think for me, it just comes bit too little, too late. Honestly, I am back to pre-Infinite Crisis levels of caring about what DC does. I mean, something explosive is truly going to happen to get my attention again, to make me care about what the company's doing.
Yeah.
I need to get over... it'll probably take 5 or 6 years of butthurt you know, that I've got to get over from Flashpoint and all that. And probably by 2020, I'll pick up a DC book again.
So what's going to happen is you're going to go see Batman v Superman. You're going to be super stoked for those DC books.
That's sure to be a diverse, bright, and encouraging experience.
You'll leave that theater and go like, I need to get by some Batman Superman.
So, Triplet, you and I have been in the theater when that trailer is played. There's the theater's like dead whenever that pops up.
And people clap after it sometimes.
Did they?
I thought you said they did.
Then they clapped at the end of Fantastic Four, and I wanted to kill myself.
Oh, yeah.
Who clapped at the end of Fantastic Four? Were they just happy that it was over with?
It was a bunch of kids.
My God.
We saw the movie with those people, but we don't know those people.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. So, yeah, the only thing I'm reading that's actually not Transformers related that's being published right now is Secret Wars. And has a new issue come out?
Number 5 is the newest issue.
I think they just added a new one as well. They just announced there's going to be a 9th. It's going to go to 9 issues instead of 8.
Oh, really? When does the Marvel relaunch actually officially start? Is it October?
October, yeah. Not long away now. It seems like it's quite close for a thing that's only half over.
Yeah.
In terms of number of issues released, isn't it?
Yeah.
So is it really a soft reboot, hard reboot? I mean, will there actually be a huge status quo change at the end of this?
Oh, no.
I don't think we know, right? I mean, we don't know everything.
Like, but we know Miles is going to be sticking about. And I mean, there's that other book, Contest of Champions, which looks like it's basically where the pressed sweepings of Battleworld will be left. All the other the notable alternate reality characters are going to be fighting one another in that storyline. Weird World is still going to exist on Earth somehow, so there's that. But beyond that, you know, I mean, I fully expect things to basically go back to basically the way things were with a few nips and tucks here. The real question, I think, is since we know the one thing we definitely know is that Miles is sticking about, is whether or not whether they're going to crisis it. Or whether they're going to present this as a change, you know, is that going to be, hey, look, it's Miles, the Spider-Man who used to live in another dimension, but now lives on our planet. Or
he's always been there. You just didn't know it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's going to be a crisis style thing where Miles will always have existed there.
I bet they are going to do that. I bet they do something like that. That's what I'm thinking.
I'm inclined to think that they might, largely because, although we've all said it on this show that Miles is the only part of the Ultimate Universe worth saving at this point.
Agreed.
I'm kind of not sure, like, Miles has a whole supporting cast and everything that would basically be, you know, lost if he just hopped from one universe to the next.
They need to go with him.
I think they might, you know, crisis it so that Miles and his supporting gets to keep his supporting cast, and they're not all dealing with being interdimensional refugees and stuff.
So I only read it sparingly. I liked what I read, but I didn't really get into it. Is Peter still a supporting cast member of Miles, or is that actually not Peter?
That's the weird. Okay, no,
I didn't finish that. I actually got that second or that last series that was running. I didn't finish all of it, so I can't remember. So you'll have to tell me everything, McFeely, because I can't remember.
It was only like the first trade. Maybe it would have been the first two trades. Hard to say exactly, but it was the first story arc anyway. And basically, it was how Peter got to go off into the sunset with MJ. But it was like, like you say, was that not Peter? I mean, I didn't believe it was Peter.
He was a jerk. Like when he first showed up, I remember that. He's an asshole. Up,
he was a bit of a jerk, and there was like the explanation was that he was alive again because he was.
Okay. Well, you know, Bendis was right.
He woke up in a lab somewhere, and I'm like, it was the same way that Osborn was just sort of suddenly alive again, and I'm like, are you expecting me to actually take that at face value and not find that suspicious and think that that's a hook for a future story? Oh, at World's Ended, guess not.
Yeah.
it turned a bit random.
Now, since I last spoke with you, I have read something that's new. Ooh. I'm not currently reading this book, but it's something that I've never read before. I want to say that I'm not reading like current issues. I've read like older issues of it. I read Miss Marvel for the first time.
Hey!
I read the entire first arc, first 11 issues. I liked
it. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Book. Now, is that book going to make it? Is it going to come back?
Yes.
It's going to get a new number one, but it's coming back, yeah.
I might be jumping on that.
I will probably pick it up.
I mean, some of the best thing. I'm not reading a lot of the Secret Wars miniseries either. I'm basically reading anything that's a direct sub in, you know, same creator, same character stuff. I'm reading Jason Aaron's Thor's miniseries, which is great actually, because you've seen it in Secret Wars. The Thors are the police force.
Mm-hmm. They're the Green Lanterns.
Mm-hmm. And this Thor's miniseries is literally a police procedural with Beta Ray Bill and Ultimate Thor.
Awesome.
As partners investigating a serial killing, you know.
I may need to get the trade of that.
That sounds awesome.
The idea is that the victim is there's different victims in every, you know, region of Battleworld, and it turns out it's the same woman being murdered every time.
Huh.
You know, each different iteration of her from each section of Battleworld is being murdered one after the other.
I haven't read it yet, but I've got the issues. When I get caught up on Spider-Man, I'm going to read the Renew Your Vows. Has that been any?
Yes, it's been quite entertaining. I mean, maybe people are a little miffed about it because it's not what they expected out of it, because it's an odd one. Because, well, I mean, it's kind of like battle. That's the whole thing about Secret Wars. Is Battleworld is kind of vague because they mm-hmm. talk about there's no intermixing allowed between zones. Each one is a domain unto itself. But then another story, another tie-ins that they're kind of crossing over back and forth. But basically, that's sort of an ass cover, because just to cover up for the fact that, you know, multiple versions of characters exist all across the world in each of these little slices of parallel realities. And Renew Your Vows, because our Peter is in Secret Wars, the literal 616 Spider-Man.
Who he's survived. one of the survivors that was on the ship. Yeah.
So Renew Your Vows isn't about our Spider-Man, you know, it's about a Spider-Man. I mean, indistinguishable from our Spider-Man, but it's, you know, it's a bit more, it feels a bit sort of left of center as a result, you know. And I think maybe people were expecting more of a Spider-Girl, May Parker type stuff, but it's actually, remember whenever Mephisto showed them their babby that they would have had?
Yeah.
Well, it's that baby. It's her name is Alice May. No, Anna? Anna May. Anna May.
Oh, God. Anna May.
Yeah.
I need to read it. I think it's done, right? Last issue ship? One more. Okay.
I picked it up. I just haven't read it, so I may not now.
I decided to pick up Runaways as well, which is not about the Runaways, but quite good. And otherwise, yeah, I'm just sort of getting last day's tie-ins of regular books that are just wrapping up now. Like Agent of Asgard, Loki, Agent of Asgard, just wrapped up last week with, oh my goodness, what a fantastic issue.
That's what I was going to suggest, because that's one of the ones I'm actually still reading.
I haven't read any of that, not yet.
It's a good series, but everyone doesn't believe me because I'm a Loki fangirl. They're like, you just read it. I'm like, no, you got to go read it because it's a good story. And then I'm just like, don't listen to me. Go listen to other people. I guess they'll tell you it's a good story. It's just amazing how the two characters collide, and I loved it.
I really feel like I've said it on the show before, but it would have been a long time ago now, was that my concern with Agent of Asgard was always that it was just going to be a Loki book because they were supposed to have a Loki book now, and it would just be there to fill the gap. But it really did follow on all the themes and all the stuff that Agent of Asgard did, Journey into Mystery did, and it's just as sweetly tragic as that one was.
I know, you're just like, is he ever going to get a win? You're just like, dang it.
And as I said, the final issue came out last week, and it's all.
I haven't read the final issue because
no spoilers, but it's really, really good, and it's all right back to that thing that began Journey into Mystery about the power of words and stories they have to shape our lives. Like, just brilliant stuff. One of Marvel's best
things. Might need to pick up a trade on that too.
I'm excited to pick it up because I haven't been to the comic book shop since I've been overseas, but. Yeah, it's one of those things. I'm excited to see what happens, but I don't want it to end.
I mean, it's because there's no word of a new Loki book to take its place.
Yeah, I know.
And I think that's the thing, is that you can't just throw a Loki book out now. They've kind of established what that book very specifically has to be through, you know, two different two separate but very interrelated long form runs by one run each by a single writer. You can't just sort of throw another writer at Loki and hope that whatever he does sticks. There's an expectation's been definitely created out of what they've done with that character so far now. So I don't think they'll rush to do a new Loki book right away anyway till they get it just right. Because there's no word of one anymore.
Yeah, so I'm excited to pick that last issue up, but I don't want it to end. Well, so what is it, issue 18, right?
17, I think.
17, okay.
So talking about the Secret Wars books that are by the same creative team or same author, the one that I'm getting that isn't the main Secret Wars book is Secret Wars 2099, because, of course, I love Spider-Man 2099 and Peter David. And it's okay. It's
just
not,
okay.
It's okay. It's not my favoite-est thing, but you know, it's okay.
I lost you for a sec there, Brian. What book was it?
So it's the Secret Wars 2099 by Peter David, because I love Peter David and Spider-Man 2099, and just like every other Peter David book, I don't expect Spider-Man 2099 to come back. It's not part of the universe once.
I think they have said no. 2099 is coming back.
Okay, thank goodness.
Does the book sell well? Because I figured that would.
I can't. It can't. It's a 2099 book. It's Peter David.
when you say Secret Wars 2099, am I just sad and thinking that I kind of hope it's just literally the 1980s Secret Wars miniseries, but with 2099 characters?
No, it's
the Beyonder just plucks them, and then you've just got the Ravage 2099 and Punisher 2099, and they're villains. Fighting it out or something.
It's not that.
Damn it.
But it's I like it. It's not my favorite thing, but there's a shortage of books that I want to read right now, so.
Yeah. I read the first issue of Nick Spencer's Ant-Man. I liked it.
Hey, there you go.
Is that coming back, or is it?
Yes, it is. It's coming back as Astonishing Ant-Man.
Astonishing Ant-Man. Okay, that's I liked it.
The final issue of that just came out this past week as well. I don't know why they did it, but they published, you know, like how books like Silver Surfer and Magneto and Loki, and they're doing this, they have this last days banner for their sort of Secret War tie-in, like how the characters spend the last day before the world ends. Well, instead of doing that for one issue of Ant-Man, they published a one-shot called The Last Days of Ant-Man, but that came out this week, and it was rather good too.
Huh.
Interesting. Any other books that we want to throw out there before we jump in?
I'm loving Gem and the Holograms.
Really?
Oh, so I just read that all recently.
So much fun.
Good, isn't it?
So it is good.
It is fun.
It really is, yeah.
So how badly is it going to sell when that movie comes out?
Oh, boy.
Is the movie going to destroy that comic?
I hope not, because the comic is... It's what you want. I mean... It's just a lot of fun.
The art looks cool on it. I've seen
it. The art is a lot of fun, too.
The art looks... it looks really colorful, and it looks like a fun book. I haven't read it.
Yeah, but Sophie Campbell does a great job.
I've heard it's good. I also heard that the Mark Waid Archie comic was good, and I didn't.
Oh my God!
You read it.
I didn't dislike it. I didn't love it.
I want to read it. I haven't read it yet.
I mean, it's just Archie. It really is. It's not like if you're not disposed
to it. But it's Archie by Mark Waid and Archie by the artist of Saga. That sounds awesome.
And just purely it's like probably in the grand scheme of things, it's really more of a curio than anything else. But it's such a lovely looking, funny curio that I can't help but be really into it. I'm sure my interest will go after a little while, because I can't imagine that creative team is going to keep on Archie for forever. But
if the chips keep, you know, going through,
I don't give a crap about Archie, but just like the idea of it sounded really awesome when I heard it.
Yeah. But Chips Zdarsky is doing a Jughead series very soon as well. He's the guy that does Sex Criminals with Matt Fraction and Howard the Duck.
Nice.
So another book that has a really great team on it that's also a curio, I guess, but it's really good, is Star Wars. I've read the first four or five issues. I haven't picked up recently because I've sort of fallen off, but a lot of people really love that. Anybody else reading that?
I'm weird because I like Star Wars, but I've never read any Star Wars comics. I don't care to.
I read the first couple Darth Vader ones. That was really fun.
I did see some great pages from the Darth Vader series on Tumblr. where he realizes, like, about that Luke is his son and what it means and how the Emperor has deceived him and how he really turns on his master for the first time. And it did look very good, I have to say.
So here's the thing that's funny is I would love to read those comics, but I think they publish too many, and I think that puts me off. Like, I think if there was, like, one book, like, maybe two books, but there's, like, what, a Star Wars, a Vader, a Leia. I think a Han Solo's coming or something, and something else.
Well, there are Vader and Star Wars, I think, are the only two ongoings.
Are they the only ongoings? Is everything else a one-shot or a mini?
Well, minis mostly, but I won't swear to that. I'm not 100% sure.
So the Jason Aaron book is the
Star Wars.
Yes, the Star Wars book, and it really feels like Star Wars. That's the cool thing about it. So
when is it set? Is it like set post?
It's set post A New Hope.
Yeah, between New Hope and Empire, right?
Yeah. So John Cassidy did the art in the first several issues. I'm actually just now checking Comixology, and it looks like the last issue, Stuart Amonin did the art.
John Cassidy, not able to produce more than 6 issues. The devil, you say.
But I would rather have Stuart on a book anyway, because the art's awesome.
Yeah. Great.
Source,
I mean, that, they've really, you know, sunk some of their top tier talent into those books. So it's come off. You know, it's the numbers speak for themselves, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to pick up the last couple issues and read through those. I may do that and read them on my commute this week. Really good stuff, though. I would totally recommend people check those out.
Squirrel Girl and Howard the Duck remain two of my favorite things that Marvel's doing right now.
I'm going to get those. I haven't got them yet.
Well, they're both ending for this, and new number ones are coming out after in October or November time. So.
So I've started hearing people outside of comics talking about Squirrel Girl.
Hey,
like,
that's
making like such an impact that I'm like seeing her like on video game websites. I'm seeing her on like movie-related websites where they're like, they need to put Squirrel Girl in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I was like, really?
The thing is, I don't think they would do Squirrel Girl right.
Okay.
Well,
I don't know. It could be really ridiculous. It could be really ridiculous in the movie sense. With
she's
her.
Always been a joke character, you see, though, and that's why those people. I'm sorry. Whenever I hear video gaming websites, my vision sort of clouds over. These are some people that have been crying out for Deadpool and everything as an Easter egg.
Oh, Deadpool!
Now they got him.
Well, that's it. Now the Deadpool's gone mainstream. They need the newest wacky, funny Easter egg, side obscure character that everybody's talking about, and they've all shifted their focus onto Squirrel Girl. That's what it is.
Yeah.
And I'm like, leave my Squirrel Girl alone. I don't imagine you. Red Lakes.
That's exactly how I feel.
So
get your gamer dude bro hands off my Squirrel Girl.
So we got together to talk about Ant-Man and Fantastic Four, but the Deadpool trailer has shown up, and it's like people have come out of the woodworks to talk about how much they love the Deadpool trailer. And
I want to not like it, but I'm having trouble.
It looks like it'll be fun. I don't give a crap about Deadpool, but I think it'll be fun to watch.
It's my number one movie for next year to watch. I'm so excited for it.
The only concern I come away with after watching that trailer is whether or not they're able to make that style of comedy last for 2 hours without becoming annoying. That's all. And that's always been a concern with Deadpool anyway. I was really worried we were going to have 2 hours of Daniel Way's Bugs Bunny with guns Deadpool and boobs boobs and blood talking to floating caption boxes, even though it's a film and that would make any sense. But that trailer, that's Joe Kelly's Deadpool I'm seeing there. That's a Deadpool with a tragic aspect in his past that's put at the absolute fore of the trailer. I didn't know Blind Owl was in the film. Ajax is in the film. Weasel's in the film. I want to be a bit more reserved and sort of grumble about it because Deadpool. But
Joe Kelly Deadpool is the only thing I know. I don't know any of the other Deadpools.
It's the good Deadpool, you know. Yeah. It really does see. I'm still a little worried that I'm not happy it's R rated because the comics never had to be R rated to be funny, and I'm worried that he's swearing that's the joke might be the problem with it.
I really hope they don't take that overboard. I don't mind if people cuss, but if it's the only thing that's in your vocabulary, it gets It's annoying. And that's why I got in a fight with Christina Aguilera, because she has a horrible vocabulary.
Like a fist fight?
Yeah, I got in a fight with Aguilera.
Like a fist fight?
Just about her bodyguard had to separate us.
What? Really?
Yeah.
wait, really?
Yeah, true story.
I want to hear this story.
I want to hear this story, yeah.
I thought you guys probably have heard the story.
I've never heard this story.
Okay, so when the Olympics were here...
Forget them films for a second. Yeah.
So when the Olympics were here in Salt Lake City in 2002, I was green room escort, so I had to take care of celebrities and make sure they were all happy and just satisfied with life and everything. Well, I got assigned to Christina Aguilera. And for 3 days, all she said was the F word every other word, and she's complaining and being just a total bitch. Well, at one point, I broke because she's like, I effing hate it here. It's effing cold. And I just lost it. I'm like, well, put some effing clothes on. It's the effing Winter Olympics. Winter's in the title. She looked so surprised, and she started getting in my face. She's like, I can't believe you would talk to me like that. And I'm just like, I'll talk to you however I want. So we were getting like face to face. Me and Christina and her bodyguard had to separate us. And then I had to be reassigned to someone else because, yeah.
That's awesome.
Wow.
That's a good story.
Yeah. I thought you probably guys have heard it before.
Nope.
No. Never heard that.
Yeah, so I got to hang out.
Like on Twitter or something.
Oh, no. It was actual.
How did we do all of Fanboy Versus, and I've never heard that once?
Never showed up. What the hell?
Yeah. That's why I can't stand to see her on TV. If the voice is on and she's the judge, I will not watch it. I cannot stand her. And everyone's like, well, maybe she's changed. I don't care. This is when she was Dirty Christina, you know? Yeah. Just okay. And so she had that reputation to uphold, but I couldn't stand her. So yeah, so I got to hang out with a lot of celebrities back then. She was one I got into a fight with.
That's really cool.
Okay.
Didn't know that.
That's a good joke.
I could tell you tons of stories from the Olympics. That's a whole different show.
Olympic cast.
Yeah.
We only make an episode every 4 years.
Yeah, that. that same week, I about ran over President Bush with a golf cart.
Wow.
What? I'm glad I didn't drink this drink when you said that. I'm going to do this today.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay, so Deadpool. That certainly was a trailer.
I'm disheartened that the first trailer was a Red Band trailer.
The second trailer.
There was a
Green Band trailer as well that accompanied it. So you could watch either one.
Well, but there's the fact that they were simultaneous. So they led with, he swears.
He swears
so
a lot.
Worried about that. Yeah. But besides that, it does look like it's hitting a lot of the right notes, and I think it might be enough for me to overcome my apathy at what Deadpool has been diluted into. It's like, I do still like Deadpool. I just really hate people who like Deadpool.
My favorite, I tell everyone what you say, and it's the greatest thing. People who care about Deadpool are the same ones who think that Carnage is Spider-Man's best villain.
Yeah. I hope retailers are stocking up on their Carnage trades for February because you know people are going to be coming in looking for that. And get a little bit of Spawn in there too, guys.
Speaking of Carnage, I was just thinking about you telling me that the other day, that McFeely said that. And today I saw a Lego set that had Carnage in it, and I thought about that.
That's great.
There's a new Carnage series coming out in October, or maybe not October, but coming up as part of the new book. But
ongoing series?
They just killed him.
But Jerry Conway is writing it.
Jerry Conway?
What the hell is that?
How do you do a Carnage ongoing series? Does he kill someone every issue?
I'm not 100% sure if it is ongoing or if it's just a mini or not. But
I'm just saying, how would you even do that? Does he learn not to kill people? Does he learn that he's a bad person, that he should be a good guy now? Is that what the story is?
I don't know. I have no clue what Carnage's current deal is. Didn't he get inverted?
He was killed in the main Spider-Man series. He died doing something. I forgot what it was. It was
he awesome. Died doing something. Yep.
Yeah.
Sure, he's factions. I mean, he was. I know he was one of the ones that got inverted in Axis, the crossover nobody read. But I don't know if he died in it or what. There's a bit of a weird... I mean, I'm assuming it is a kind of a knock-on effect from Deadpool, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, I could care who less if it's Deadpool. I mean, if it's fun, it's fun. But Deadpool doesn't really mean anything.
If 90s stuff is coming back, I want a Sleepwalker movie.
Hey.
And a Darkhawk movie.
Don't go crazy now.
And a Ghost Rider movie from the 90s. Set in the 90s. I think that would actually do well if he said it.
Wouldn't be a bad idea. Where's my NFL Super Pro movie?
Be a lot of Nirvana on that soundtrack. You turn into Ghost Rider and you hear Smells Like Teen Spirit. Be all right.
Okay. Yeah. So I think we should probably start off with the lesser offense, because I don't think it's a defense. I actually enjoyed it.
Lesser offense. Yeah.
But I personally enjoyed, didn't love, but I personally really enjoyed Ant-Man. Considering I don't know a thing about Scott Lang, and they tweaked things, like one of the things leading in was that the professor that he's actually dealing with is actually, can't think, brain fart, what? Giant man, you know, can't think,
Hank Pym!
There you go.
Couldn't think of Hank Pym, sorry. Right. Yeah, sorry. I don't take notes before I do anything. So that was sort of a weird thing that Hank was you know, older. The mother was Jan, right?
But yeah.
I don't remember if it actually explicitly said it.
Yeah, I think they say Janet at some point, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They name her, yeah.
Yeah, but it's just kind of funny that DC could do something like that and it would bug me, but Marvel does it.
It would bug you? Really?
A little bit. But Marvel does it, and I don't care.
Bug.
Yeah.
I think Marvel, part of it could be because we've always known that that was Wright's vision for this movie, going back to, gosh, I mean, how long has Wright been attached to this? It's got to be a decade or something, you know, that Edgar Wright's Ant-Man with Scott Lang as the young modern hero and Hank Pym as the old retired version of the character has been a thing. So I think it softens it. I mean, I enjoyed Ant-Man, but I do still live in a state of perpetual simmering annoyance that Hank Pym and Ultron both made their cinematic debuts the same year in two films set in a shared universe, like 2 months apart, and have nothing to do with one another.
I know. Yeah. I still have a hard time with that.
You didn't even get your little nod, like, oh, back in the 60s, he created something that led to the creation of Ultron or something. We didn't even get that.
There was room for it, too.
It's like, if I just hadn't have built that supercomputer for Howard Stark, damn it. You know? That Ultron 1 supercomputer, damn it.
But they're quite good about, I mean, it's the strength of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, they are quite good about bringing distilling down the best aspects of the character to carry forward, you know? I mean, I've said it before, I don't remember on this show or not, but Scott Lang is absolutely the right choice to make this movie about. He's the one
You don't want to start out with Hank Pym. Oh, well, you already got 50 Shades of Grey this year. So.
Oh, God.
I'm not having that discussion. But but Scott's the one with the nice, straightforward, one-sentence cinematic backstory. You know, former thief trying to make good, forced to return to crime to provide for his daughter, and winds up stealing a superhero suit. It just, you know, and you can, the film writes itself around that. But Hank Pym, his most, describe Hank Pym's personality to me, you know?
Domestic abuse.
Don't.
sorry. I don't know, honestly.
Wait, so that's it. You know, I mean, the best version of Hank Pym that there's ever been was the Earth's Mightiest Heroes cartoon.
Right.
That was
distilled it all down. And even then, like, his personality is bound up in being part of the team. Same as the Wasp. You know, it's like, you know, people say that, oh, why can't I have a Wasp solo movie instead of an Ant-Man solo movie? And I'm like, well, if you want anything relating to the actual character of the Wasp,
That character is, it's like, to me, asking why you don't have a Wasp movie is like asking why there's no Robin movie, because she's Ant-Man's sidekick. And obviously she went on to bigger and much better things as leader of the Avengers and everything, but her personality and her role within the Marvel Universe has, it is essentially, she is essential. There's no, it's completely bound up in being part of a team, or it's defined by other characters and other teams, you know? So even in Earth's Mightiest Heroes, everything that drives the character is defined by her, her interactions and relationships and what she wants for the rest of the team rather than anything of herself. So it's why you couldn't, and Hank again, it's why I don't think Hank or John could ever have had a solo movie, and Scott was absolutely the right choice to lead with.
Yeah, I think it was a good decision. I do like, though, that you got to basically see Ant-Man and the Wasp in action. You and that kind of, what was it, like the 1980s, I think, when they were fighting the missile or something. That was cool. That was your, like, one kind of little moment, you know,
I mean,
for hardcore fans, I guess.
I'm not happy that they fridged Jan. I mean, I wasn't happy that they did the dead. I mean, and I know the dead wife is part of Hank Pym's backstory in the comics, but like that's from before he meets and marries Jan. He has a dead wife from before then.
But, I didn't even know that. Really?
He does. Yeah, her name was Maria. Something about communism was the reason she's dead. I don't know.
Holy crap! I didn't even know
that's where communism usually lands. So you know, it makes sense.
Was she on the plane with Peter Parker's parents?
Oh God!
No, I think.
Sorry.
I think she was like from an Eastern Bloc country, and she and Hank went to visit her dad, who was like a target or something, and she wound up, I don't know, I've not read those old Tales to Astonish. They're all terrible, so, you know. Yeah. But yeah, she did. But I'm still not happy that they, you know, they shunted Jan out of the picture like that. And the thing that annoys me, it's a weird complaint, but it's like the language they specifically use and the way they leave it at the end of the movie makes it sound like she could be fine.
They make it sound like she's coming back.
Yeah.
Well, it makes you feel that way. Lost. She's been lost for 3 years.
It makes me feel like that when she comes back, she's going to be young.
Well, yeah, because they use this. They talk about how there would be a time and a space and a reality that you wouldn't even know. But then it's like, and then
I figured that's how that movie was going to end. Actually, that when he was in there, he'd find her and bring her back, and it's like, oh, look,
that's what I was thinking.
Younger than her own daughter now.
Yeah, but then they do the mid-credits scene. Yeah, they've got a Wasp now. Yeah, so what's the point? What's the point in ever bringing her back?
I don't know. It's weird. That was
I mean, it was a weird choice, you know. I mean, but Jim, we're jumping all around in this film here, but speaking of the end, I always figured that the logical end point, I mean, I had the basic sort of meat and potatoes of this movie sort of predicted and mapped out all right, and not in any kind of like, haha, figured it out sort of way, just like what I figured would be the logical way to tell this particular story. But I always figured that the logical end point of an Ant-Man movie was when he grows at the end and stomps the body.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's what me and Brown were talking about when we saw that was my disappointment, that I did not get a scene where he realizes he can get really big and then he boots Yellow Jacket in the head and defeats him or something to that.
That's what I was thinking that the very last end credit was going to be. I did not think it was going to be the whole Civil War stuff. And it's just like, oh, he's not doing giant.
He'll be like in his apartment with his buddies, just messing with it because Hank told him not to mess with it. And this is, oh, what's this do? And then next thing you see a giant man destroying his apartment. And he's like, oh, shit, or something at the end of it. You know?
I mean, that, it would have been cool. But to be honest, I think going the opposite direction and doing something that I never thought they would do, which was to actually bring the microverse into it, was far more exciting for me.
Takes you somewhere you've never been in the movies. I mean, that's what I like about Ant-Man, is that it's its own universe now. I mean, quite literally, the microverse. It's its own universe, separate from the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
I mean, if I was going to compare Ant-Man to anything, and this is an overblown comparison, which shouldn't really be taken as an indicator of just of a star ranking or anything, but I really would have to compare it to something like the first Iron Man movie. Where it's not about following on from all the previous movies or continuing a story that's going on in the background, like the last couple of cinematic universe movies have been. It is very much a fairly self-contained, comparatively low-stakes storyline that, that quite happily sits on its own and can then be built upon later.
Yeah, you can see this and not see any of the other Marvel movies, and I think you'd be totally fine. You might have a few questions like, who's this guy? Who's this guy? But the majority of that film, you're totally fine that being your introductory into the Marvel Universe, I think.
Yeah, I would say so.
I mean, I liked it quite a bit. I mean, it follows the generic sort of Marvel formula that they've started, at least when it comes to introducing characters. But it's a solid movie.
And yeah, it's solid, but I think like my only problem with it is like when I was watching it, I can't believe that this is the first movie that it got to me. But like of all of the Marvel movies we've seen up to this point, this was the first one where I was like, they're just following the formula. They're not really deviating. They're not really taking any chances. I mean, because they kind of didn't. I mean, the biggest chance they took in Ant-Man? And I can't.
I mean, so they made it cutesy. I mean, the stuff that toward the end, like with Thomas the Tank Engine. I mean, yeah. That was a risk. I enjoyed it too, but it was a gamble. I mean, somebody could have watched that and thought it was stupid. But
to be honest,
nothing's better than dog ant.
I love the dog.
That's a weird looking dog.
But the one thing I didn't like, you know, the villain ended up being the billionaire industrialist. You know, that I'm a little tired of that. But
that's what I meant. Yeah, I was like,
he's one of the most forgettable. And another one to add to the pile of Marvel Cinematic Universe baddies who are just really unremarkable.
Just there.
No, I'm sorry. When he killed that little lamb, I'm not kidding. That really got to me. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah, Kim sort of that shrunk really back as well.
That really disturbed me for some reason. I'm like, what the hell?
I did not realize the actor that played Yellow Jacket is the lead actor in The Strain until after.
Yep.
After this season of Strain, he shaves his head. And I was like, holy shit, he's Yellow Jacket.
We got a question in the chat. They asked, what did we think of the Falcon cameo?
I thought that was cool.
It was forced.
I chuckled. I was, really
spoiled
weird
by it, though. I saw it in a TV spot or something. That was brilliant.
I think what I enjoyed the most about it, and it's a really pedantic little thing, but was the way that he kept calling him the Falcon. Sam Wilson. It was like, yeah, because people have code names and shit now. That's how this works. Yeah.
He's an Avenger. He's a guy who's been on television saving the world, so of course he's going to call him that Falcon.
What do you know his name, though? Is Sam? Is his ID public?
It's like whenever you see news reports in the Avengers or whatever, they talk about Captain Rogers and Tony Stark's Iron Man weapon and stuff like that, you know? But no, that wasn't like Sam Wilson, former U.S. military pararescue man. That was the Falcon.
It was the Falcon. I saw it.
It was the Falcon.
I mean, I'm really looking forward to Civil War now. I mean, if this rumor that it's going to have a robotic Red Wing is true.
Wait, what? Are you serious? That's awesome.
I've heard, but yeah, but I mean, I obviously they're not going to have him actually talk to birds.
But I mean,
so the rumor I heard is a robot bird.
As long as there's a bird that's named Red Wing, I don't care. It could be a robot or not. Call it, you know, that's awesome.
Did you see they revealed the lineup of who's versus who? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
I saw it, but I didn't look at it.
Yeah,
passed it up.
Well, the Hawkeye is looking better again. Still no mask, but he's looking better. But the artwork shows Ant-Man standing on Hawkeye's shoulder.
Oh, he's going to be on an arrow at some point.
Oh, you have to leave. I mean, I will leave that theater raging if he's not shot on an arrow at some point. Because you don't do that. You don't set that up. You don't tease me like that.
Yeah.
And I'm really looking forward to seeing more Vision as well, just because I love the Vision.
And some Spider-Man. I'd like to see some Spider-Man.
Oh, he's only going to be a cameo, I think. But
yeah,
we'll see.
I mean, Civil War is sounding bigger, and like honestly, I think you know, when a lot of people are asking, why is this a Captain America movie? And I think that's becoming more and more a valid question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I don't really.
Could they make a movie and just call it Civil War? Don't they have to put something in front of it?
Well, they'd probably call it Marvel Spore or Avengers
Spore. Avengers 2.5.
If they wanted to make more money, they would either call it Avengers or Iron Man. I think they're, even with all the cast, they're probably limiting themselves by calling it Captain America, even though Captain America 2 made a lot. But
That's what I'm so worried about. There's such a big cast now. I'm like, is this going to turn into Justice League where it's just going to, you know...
Well, I mean, the baddie's supposed to be Zemo, and that's a Captain America bad guy.
And I love Zemo. They better not screw him up.
J'adore Zemo. I'm so excited for Zemo to be in a film. I just need the head sock, please.
That's my question. Like, are they going to do it? Is it going to just stay stuck to his face?
He doesn't have to. Yeah, you don't have to glue it to his face. I'll be okay. But just let him wear the head sock, you know?
And Crossbones is going to be in it. That's awesome.
Looks the business as well. Yeah,
he looks great.
I mean, Captain America's Rogues Gallery is definitely the one that's received the best treatment cinematically so far.
I hope we get a robot Arnim Zola, please.
That'd be so awesome.
Oh, that's the only thing left, you know.
That's the only missing piece.
That's his next upgrade.
We've had Crossbones. We've had Arnim Zola. We've had Batroc. We've had Dr. Faustus. We've got Zemo coming up. I mean, who's left out of Cap's Rogues Gallery?
Baron Blood.
The Serpent Society. Remember that? Remember how they teased Captain America 3 as being the Serpent Society? And then they were like, oh, no, it's really the Serpent. And I'm like, what the fuck? What a Serpent Society.
I've always thought of AIM as like a foil for Captain America.
Yes, they are too. Yeah, I mean, that's it. It's like AIM and MODOK were Captain America things originally, but they've sort of grown beyond being that now. I mean, people don't really think of MODOK as a Captain America baddie anymore, do they?
I do.
We also got a question in the chat. Now, is Civil War the start of Phase 3? Is that correct, or is it the end of Phase 2?
Phase 2 ended with Ant-Man, I think, right?
Yeah, Ant-Man was the last one of Phase 2, yeah. So Civil War is Phase 3.
Phase 3.
People are screaming out for MODOK.
Yeah.
I'm designed only for killing.
Yeah.
I have JD's MODOK mug on my desk at work.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I mean, I think we're at a point with the films where you could reasonably do MODOK now, and it wouldn't come off as ludicrous.
I wore my MODOK shirt to Ant-Man, and people were asking me who that was. And I was trying to tell them who it was, and they're looking at me like, okay. And I'm like, you don't know awesomeness unless you know MODOK.
I would want them to try and play him straight, though. I mean, again, MODOK is one of those characters who's kind of on a level with sort of like Squirrel Girl and Deadpool, and it's like, he's a big head. It's ridiculous. Look, he's in this video game.
Every once in a while, they try to bring him back and make him creepy, because I remember a Captain America story.
Captain America Priest book. The book that Priest
was that the designed only for killing stuff? And they brought that back and did all that?
It's like, I mean, even Earth's Mightiest Heroes had fun with the character. But you remember, like, when Hawkeye shot an arrow directly into the center of his forehead and he couldn't reach to get it off. Like, that's funny. You know, that's good. But I don't know when and where you would see him, but I feel like I would like to see him. I mean, we've had AIM in the films already, obviously, but it wasn't really AIM as we know it. And it's not like it's harmed AIM in any way, because they're at the end of Iron Man 3, they're still perfectly in a position to go on and then become the AIM that we know, which I think will probably happen sooner or later, because I feel like Marvel sort of recognized that they took a sort of a backward step as far as the representation of their universe and its characters went with Iron Man 3. The way they went back and they were like, yeah, okay, we admit it. We fucked up the Mandarin. Here, it's fixed.
Did they fix the Mandarin?
You didn't see the movie, did you?
I did not. I liked the Mandarin. Oh. That was my favorite part of Iron Man 3.
Well, I mean, I liked the idea for the Mandarin. I liked the idea that he was a conglomerate, you know, terrorist persona made up of all the worst bits of the worst terrorists from whatever, you know, pieced all together. That was a really, really, really clever idea. I just didn't like the fact that, like, it was then some white dude who was actually puppeteering him instead of being instead of the person playing the Mandarin actually was the Mandarin, you know.
I still want a guy with magic rings. I don't care who it is.
Oh yeah, I mean, I don't even imagine you shoot lasers is all good. But well, I mean, in the for Brian's benefit, like the short film on Thor 2's DVD, I think.
I think it was on Thor: The Dark World.
It's like a reporter comes to interview Trevor in jail. And in the course of the thing, as we recap Trevor's history on film and television, we find out that the reporter is an agent of the Ten Rings who has been sent to break Trevor out because the real Mandarin is not happy that his name has been stolen.
Good. Okay. So they do tie the Ten Rings to the Mandarin. Okay.
So like the Ten Rings wasn't just something made up by what
they were going to have the Mandarin.
It was an actual thing that
oh yeah. I mean, you could see Jon Favreau was working towards something with that. Yeah. And then they just sort of slung it.
That was originally what the script had, wasn't it? They had the Mandarin and then they basically changed it in the last 6 weeks or so. I thought
in the first movie, I don't know about that, but I mean, I know the novelization has the guy who's in charge of the Ten Ring cell we see in the first Iron Man has a big elaborate ring on. And I know in the novelization of the first Iron Man movie, he talks about the man whose ring he's wearing. You know, it's like the Mandarin marked his subordinates by giving them each one of his rings, you know.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I know in the comics he did that before and he could control them through.
Dude, I could see like 10 movies and they all die and he collects his rings and then the Mandarin shows up and he's a badass. Boom. Marvel.
I think we've already got enough stones.
You can have that one. Boom.
Sweet.
Ant-Man, though.
Yeah. It was good.
There.
Let's see. Actually, I was checking Box Office Mojo earlier to check to see where Fantastic Four was, but I'm actually curious how much Ant-Man has made at this point. Because I always judge movie, we all do, by how much money it actually made. And Ant-Man is actually still, and it just dropped out of the top 10 movies in the United States.
But yeah, I mean, it's not raking it in or anything, but it's just sitting there doing respectably.
Does it make it more than Incredible Hulk, though? That's
170 million.
What did Incredible Hulk make?
I will tell you.
I know I saw Ant-Man more than once, unlike Fantastic Four, which I'll never see again.
Okay, so Ant-Man, it's obviously made less than the other Phase 2 movies.
That well.
Yeah. Let's see here. Thor the Dark World only made $206 million. Where Cap 2 made 260. Let's see here. Where's the Marvel thing? So, Incredible Hulk. That was Incredible Hulk, right? The Ang Lee was just the Hulk.
Yep.
It made 134 million.
Okay, so it's already beat it, hasn't it?
Yeah, it already beat that, and it's close to catching up, I think, with Captain America, the first one. First one made 100.
That's where it deserves to sort of sit around.
Well, that's good.
I think if you were grading them, it's definitely. I mean, obviously, I'm sure the accountants don't feel like it's fairer to compare it to a Phase 1 movie, but I think from everything that the film's doing, it's much more of a Phase 1-ish.
Yeah, it is.
The whole
in film. All fairness, I'm glad Ant-Man did as well as it did because. I know myself, when it first was announced, I'm like, why does he need his own movie? He does not need his own movie. And then, like, a lot of people that I go to movies with, they didn't even know who he was.
Yeah.
I first thought Ant-Man needs to be in Avengers. That's where this character needs to show up. Mm-hmm. That's where the Wasp needs to show up. But when I get to thinking about it, where they're kind of creating worlds within each movie, he has his own world. His world is that micro-reverse miniaturized world, and it's cool that he got his own movie.
It made about half of what Guardians of the Galaxy made, but you know what?
It's a runaway hit.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, if Guardians of the Galaxy can make money, Marvel can just print money. And I basically said if Ant-Man makes money, Marvel has a license to print money. I don't know that they do, though, because it seems like the movie... like
Marvel still know to be cautious, I think. You know, they can definitely take bigger risks now, but they're not pumping out a Sleepwalker movie or a unfortunately, movie or anything
or
like
Dark
that.
Hawk.
And like Avengers,
the movie
Avengers 2 is not the success that the first Avengers was. Of course, it wasn't the same. Wasn't the movie the first one was?
Yeah.
But you know, last year was it last year when Captain America 2 came out?
Yeah,
and you know, they both did that, and Guardians of the Galaxy did really well, but not as well as Iron Man 3.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah,
that's depressing. Actually,
I liked Iron Man 3.
I know you like Iron Man 3.
I didn't care for it.
There's nothing wrong with people that like Iron Man 3. I just like to call it out. You know,
Iron Man 3 is one of the. It's the same sort of problem that I have mostly with Avengers 2, which is the things that annoy me about it are the more petulant, nerdy, foot stompy complaints.
I mean,
Iron Man 3 is maybe not as tight of a film otherwise.
I'm less about that, like less about the Mandarin not being the Mandarin, and more about so he could have fixed his heart in the first movie, but he waited didn't. Until the third movie to do it.
We've talked about this a billion times, but it feels like a scene that's thrown on at the end.
It does.
As a way of adding a false coda to make it seem like the end of a trilogy of stories.
Why does he feel like he's stopping being Iron Man, and then what is he still doing? He's Iron Man in Avengers.
I like the notion, like that. I'm interested to see what sort of deleted scenes are on this Age of Ultron Blu-ray, because it's. To me, like Whedon would have played with the idea, even if it was just making a joke about it, that basically he blows up all his suits at the end of Iron Man 3, and then what's he doing in Age of Ultron? Trying to build an AI that will be able to remote control a bunch of suits.
Yeah.
So it's like, it seems to me like Whedon wouldn't have missed an opportunity to make a joke about how he was making a big grand statement to impress his girlfriend and then kind of had to just make all the suits again.
Well, maybe he's doing that in secret so that she doesn't know. That's what it is. I don't know. But yeah.
Do we have anything else to say about Ant-Man? Because I really want to talk about Fantastic Four.
Well,
all right.
Real quick about Ant-Man. I was glad that it turned out as well as it did, especially since we were all worried about all the problems leading up to it, because it was a rocky situation with Ant-Man.
I mean, it's quite interesting when you think about it. We're about to talk about a film that has, not in the same way, but that also suffered from studio interference.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, studio interference from Marvel is what caused Edgar Wright to leave this project and Peyton Reed to come on instead. And I mean, people say that you can see the bits that are Wright's and the bits that aren't. And I'm like, I guess I don't know his work well enough to look at.
I couldn't tell. I was thinking... The goofy kind of friend and his goofy stories was the right thing, but I heard that that's not.
I heard that
wasn't part of the original script. So, like, I can't tell, honestly.
I mean, and I like that, too, because, I mean, you look at probably Marvel's, the one other movie the Marvel Studios have put out that is the most studio diddled with, and Thor 2. And I don't mean in a detrimental way. I mean, just means Thor 2 has no voice.
Yeah.
It's very identikit by committee filmmaking. You know, the other Marvel movies have a sort of a stamp on them where there's a bit of flavor to them. And even Ant-Man has that with like fun, like sort of unique sequences like that where the friend tells the stories and it's his voice coming out of all these different people's mouths and everything. You know, so it definitely had a little bit more flavor to it than something like that, despite those problems, you know. I mean, I still would be very curious to know what Edgar Wright's Ant-Man would have been like, but to be honest, I mean, this is still, I mean, it's not a mind-blowing piece of cinema or anything, but it sits very comfortably in the upper middle of the Marvel movies if you rank them, you know.
Oh yeah, it's higher than Thor 2 for me.
Mean, I think Thor 2 is the one that's down at the very bottom, and Thor 2 is still fine.
It's fine, but it's not the first movie, I think.
I mean, I think most people will agree that, numerical ranking aside, the best Marvel movies are Iron Man, The Avengers, Guardians of the Galaxy, and The Winter Soldier.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you put them in whatever order you choose, but that's your top four. And then things like Thor, Captain America, Ant-Man, is that all of them? Yeah, they sort of occupy the middle ground, and then sort of drifting towards the bottom, you got your Iron Man 2, your Iron Man 3, your Incredible Hulk, your Thor 2.
I like Iron Man 3 better than Iron Man 1 or 2, but I'm going to shut up here.
Yeah, that's weird.
You like it better than the first one.
The first one's...
But could you have your bird in Iron Man 3?
That's true. And Sam Rockwell is amazing in Iron Man 2.
Sam Rockwell's great in Iron Man.
You're bored. You're bored.
Take his shoes, his pillows, and his bird. How does that feel when someone takes your things?
Not my bird.
Not the bird.
It's a very nice bird.
It's a very nice bird.
It's not my bird.
It's not my bird.
You can get you a bird, yeah, no problem.
I need to rewatch Iron Man 2. I don't know why.
Iron Man 2 was the up until you got Iron Man 3 and Thor 2. Iron Man 2 was the one that you told yourself in the head that was the duff one.
Yeah.
But then you rewatch, and it's still actually, it's really still quite entertaining. It's just not as good as any of the other Phase 1 movies.
It's just so weird. I don't know what he was going for when he made that one, but it's just so weird. And I love it because of that.
Yeah.
What else about Ant-Man? Oh, well, it took a long time before I saw anybody else saying this, but when he shrinks into the microverse, did anyone else see, like, the figure in all the shapes and lights and star stuff?
No, I didn't see this. What was this?
That's just what it is. It's a figure. It seems like a person-shaped shape in all the shapes, lights, and everything.
Did you smoke before going into it?
It's there. Go watch it again. But I mean, my first instinct was that it was Jan because, you know, the film set it up and everything. But then it occurred to me that he's shrinking out of the universe. And Doctor Strange is out next year.
Oh, okay.
And the figure's made out of star stuff, you know? So I'm like, did we get a look at Eternity there?
Maybe.
And I come out of the cinema thinking this, and I can't see anybody else saying it anywhere, but if you Google it now, you'll find lots of articles of people talking about it.
I didn't notice it. Maybe I just wasn't paying close attention.
The one thing I noticed was the tardigrade, or whatever, however you pronounce it, that microscopic animal that was known to survive space flight, clung onto the... a rocket or whatever and came back down and survived. But the thing that bugged me about this is they had the perfect opportunity to show, like, the probabilistic nature of, like, you know, the quantum reality and how cool that could have been, but they just went nowhere with it.
That's a bit high concept, I think, for what this film was doing. I mean, I know Pym called it a quantum reality and everything, but I mean, I think it's just the microverse. It's just a tiny dimension, you know? I mean, gosh, what would you even do with a quantum reality?
I don't know. I would have liked to have seen them explore it.
Maybe it's a reality of nothing but shrimp. Maybe it's a reality where there isn't shrimp. I don't know! These are questions for smarter people, not for me.
It's pretty funny. So anything else before we jump into Fantastic Four?
Let's get on to it.
Oh my God, Fantastic Four. Go ahead.
Did anyone else come out hurting after watching this movie?
I'm really glad it's a couple of weeks later now, and then we're not doing this when it was hurt.
You guys got to go back and watch McFeely's tweets.
Yes, those were epic.
Hey, McFeely, do you want to just, like, read off some of your tweets real quick?
No. I'm focused.
So my thing about it, like, I kept telling people, it's not as bad as you've heard. It's worse.
Yeah.
This is the thing about the. Before we get into any details, I think it's currently sitting on like 8% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's
8 last time I checked, yeah.
And I honestly, I don't think it's an 8% bad movie. I think that about two-thirds. The film is split very neatly into two parts, about two-thirds and the last third. The first hour and the last half hour, because it's only like an hour and a half long. The first hour is its biggest crime is that it's just boring.
Yeah.
It's drawn out. It's sterile. There's no character depth whatsoever. But you can at least see there's a kernel of an idea of a movie of what Josh Trank is trying
to do. There's a plan. Yeah. There's some sort of thing.
It's a bad plan. It's a bad idea.
Even if he'd been left alone to make his own film, it wouldn't have been a good version of the Fantastic Four, and it likely wouldn't have been a very good film. But
he
it would have been.
He swears that it would have been on Twitter and everywhere else. And
I, funnily enough, don't believe him.
Yeah,
but it would have been coherent. It would have been a coherent film, even if it had a lot of problems and wouldn't have been very good. But then what happens is, as we all know, the studio basically gets... Because Trank pitches this movie, essentially, as a Cronenbergian body horror type thing, dealing with the Fantastic Four's changed bodies. And it's pretty obvious. I mean, I think there'll be documentaries about this 10 years from now.
I'm hoping... That's what I'm looking forward to because I want to know what went wrong. And I think there's a good documentary in this.
This is an Alien 3 or Isle of Dr. Moreau.
Yeah, on Rotten Tomatoes, it's at 9%, but the audience score gave it 21. So I'm like, what?
In my mind...
You're enjoying this?
In my mind, it's an 8%. Because it's not a score of how, you know, that's not a 0 to 100 scale of how good the movie is. That says basically the 8% of the people that reviewed this gave it a positive review. I want to know who those 8% of people are because it's a bad movie.
Well, that's there because that's how Rotten Tomatoes does it. But I think that says a lot because I think that this exact movie could have been released, say, 10 years ago.
It would have been fine.
And it still wouldn't have been good. It still wouldn't have like been very well reviewed, but I think you'd be talking at least in the 20s or 30s in the percent. Like
this could have come out around the same time as Batman Forever, and people would have said, "Okay, that's okay." You know,
yeah, they would have
Batman
probably
forever.
Been
Batman Forever, the mid-90s, whenever superhero films were allowed to be colorful and have fun. This would have come out.
Well, no, I mean, well, maybe not. Maybe not the look. But
would have come out direct to video.
No, well, that's it. I mean, like the look of the thing is just as important. So this sterile, bleached, strip lighting, claustrophobic laboratory setting.
Joyless is how I describe it.
It is joyless.
Yeah, it's not really joyless.
But the movie,
reference every little nod that it makes towards the comic. What few there are. Every clobber in time, flame on, they all feel like they're done out of some begrudging sense of necessity.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, that brings me up to something that I just want to say real quick while we're talking about it. When we were starting the movie, before this scene took place, I leaned to one of my friends and said, coming up, I bet they're going to have a scene in which Ben Grimm's dad is beating on him and he says, clobber in time. And the next scene that had his brothers beating on him and he says clobber in time. I was like, what?
It's so terrible.
I don't inherently object to that. If the film had gone on then to tell any kind of story in which Ben reclaimed the phrase. But he didn't.
He didn't.
He just said it then and said it again.
He should have broken down and cried after he said it. That would have made it much better.
My own brother!
Oh my god!
I think the thing that bugged me about it though was the fact that when the movie started, it was basically said that that Reed was like 5 or something or 7 in 2007.
Oh yeah, I know, right?
And fuck! Like, oh god!
Oh, we're so old. We're gonna die.
Like you know, Batman is perpetually about 35, which is great because it gives me hope. But no, Reed Richards is like 12. Thing is, he doesn't come off as that smart. He comes off basically as a cartoon character. He's basically...
well, that's the characterization of everybody in the film. It's like, you know, he uses a couple of big words. No, but there's no depth of characterization in the thing. Everyone is reduced to one or two. But God help poor Sue Storm.
Oh, God.
Oh, yes.
Pattern recognition. That's it.
Is she the worst of all the characters in the movie? Because
Doctor Doom.
Doom's the worst.
Of the four, she definitely... Sit the biggest, like absolutely.
I was fine with Johnny for the most part. He was the one I disliked the least.
Johnny wasn't bad, but like I cannot forgive a movie in which there's none of that interaction between him and Ben because it wasn't there. It wasn't there at all.
Like the
there was a little bit of it at the end. There we were the
tiniest bit.
But that's it.
The whole final scene. Never mind the whole, I mean, that's what I didn't finish saying it there, but then the last half hour of the film is basically the studio gets cold feet about what Trank wants to do.
It's all reshoots.
Takes over the production, does a whole pile of reshoots completely without him, And the whole last half hour of the film has basically got nothing to do with the hour that's come before it. And it's a real confused, unexplained mess.
Sticks out because of the thumb.
Is that the black screen with 1 year later you're talking about?
Like, I mean, it's like the first hour is like, it's not good. It's not good at all. Mm-hmm. But you can see what's being done. There's an idea there, even if it's not a good one, and it's not being put out, it's not being communicated well at all, but it's there. And then all hope is lost when that card flashes up on the screen. Jin, 1 year later. Could not believe it. I couldn't.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was like, "What happened in the last year? Are they going to tell me?"
I laughed out loud.
Oh god, that was.
Thing killed 43 people.
What the hell? Why does he have a kill count?
The kill count was awesome.
Now, did any of you guys read the article that went up a little while ago about the original script draft from before Trank was involved?
No.
Okay. What's really interesting about that is that all the ideas that the studio came and put back into the film in that last half hour come right out of that draft. And that draft starts out really well. It's much the same stuff Ultimate inspired, Reed and Ben in the garage together, going to the Baxter Foundation, et cetera, et cetera. They actually have, I mean, I think we all know Tim Blake Nelson's character was supposed to be the mole man, Harvey Elder.
Is that the guy from Incredible Hulk?
Yeah.
He's going to be the leader.
Yeah.
He looks like a mole man.
Yeah, I know, he's got a choice. But that's two Marvel villains that he's never going to get the chance to play in. But, I mean, they even change his name in the finished film, so he's not that character anymore. But he was going to be Harvey Elder, the guy who becomes the Mole Man.
They changed Amishad's name, too.
Yeah, they, I mean, that's another big... I mean, you can tell from Kate Mara's terrible wig whenever... I heard another reviewer described Kate Mara's terrible wig as a human asterisk that sort of denotes whether...
Yes, that's exactly... That's true.
Yeah. Because it would change throughout scenes, wouldn't it? You'd be like, this scene she would have this hair, this scene she would have this
hair. Whether it was or not. But this original draft, it follows the basic start and everything. And when they go to the negative zone. They don't go to planet zero, whatever that
is. What the hell?
Planet zero?
But
couldn't they have just said that,
we
like,
call it
like,
planet zero.
There's negative something something in this area. We're just going to go call it the negative zone. No, we're planet zero.
And then,
are we calling it planet zero?
But it's also it's a planet that's established as having its own like living life force or biosphere or something. So like, you couldn't call it Planet Ego. You couldn't go for that. You know, no, nothing. But in this draft, they arrive in the negative zone, and the world they arrive on is just blasted, devoid of life. They find the ruins of the civilization that had lived there before, and what it turns out they've landed on is a world that's in the final stages of being consumed by Galactus.
Ooh!
And Galactus turns upon them as the last living things on the planet, and they escape back through their machine. But you know, the blast of energy Galactus unleashes interacts with that, and they come out with their powers on the other side. And I like that. I don't mind a Galactus connection to the origin. Various cartoons have done that before in comics. That's fine. Doom gets left behind, as in the film. And then there's a 4 year time skip, and I'm like, oh fuck this draft. Sorry, never mind. You were going so well there, guys. But then they do a 4 year time skip. Ben still kills for the military, and the whole thing with Doom trying to build a super weapon at the very end is still true. Because I mean, the way the rest of the draft goes is the Mole Man also happens when Doom attacks the Baxter Building, the experiment that. This Tim Blake Nelson is working on is disrupted, and it winds up, you know, splashing. It's a giant monster, and they recreate the cover of Fantastic Four number one, and I'm like,
we lost you, Chris.
Uh-oh. The internet cannot take the McFeely rage.
It's too much.
It's too much.
Where did you lose me?
They're going to recreate the cover to Fantastic Four number one.
Oh, well, that's brilliant, and that's what we need.
Yes.
But not in this particular draft of the film, which is a film that already had Galactus and Doctor Doom in it. You can't throw the Mole Man in there with that as well. But the way the rest of the film basically went was that it turned out Dr. Doom had been a spy, actually funneling Reed's research back to Latveria. And in the intervening 4 years, Latverian scientists used the information he sent them to reopen the quantum gate to try and recover him from the negative zone. He comes through. He's got powers, sadly, same as in the finished film. He kills all the scientists. And then it turns out, essentially, that he has escaped with his life by vowing to become Galactus's herald and leading him to Earth to consume. But then he tries to build a weapon to destroy Galactus rather than live in servitude.
Yeah. Doom doesn't need pitiful Galactus.
Exactly.
There was no point of even having Doom in this movie.
Yeah.
You saw him before he got changed, what was 5 minutes in the movie before he got changed.
So I have a question. I have a question. What does God need with it? Never mind. no. Why wasn't this a movie where the villain was a nihilist? Wouldn't it be much better if Doom's character just didn't exist? I mean, he could have been like one of the guys working on the project. Something happens to him. He's gone. Gone from the movie completely. And then the thing that they find on the other side that's the threat, why isn't it a nihilist?
That would have been awesome.
That's what they should have done. Like, they should have saved Doom. Go ahead.
No, I agree with you about saving. I don't inherently object to connecting Doom to the Fantastic Four's origin. I know some people have problems with that. I don't inherently mind it as an organic way of tying him into the story. Yeah. They need to stop giving him powers, though.
Oh yeah,
that totally fundamentally misses the point of Doom.
Why but can't also, he like give them powers and not give him, and then that just be another thing he hates Reed for?
All that you do is that the accident fucks his face up and gives everyone else powers. That's just, it's as easy as that.
Yeah, he's like, I hate you.
And where did he get that cloak?
I got this.
He was on that planet all by himself. Where did he get the cloak?
I did see somebody say that it was probably the flag they brought with him. And I think that's probably true.
So, killed a creature and he skinned it.
But it's really, really hard to get from Doom, their contemporary, in a science experiment to Doom, ruler of Latveria. Which is why they need to stop making him part of the origin, because it screws with it.
Yeah.
I mean, the Fantastic Four cartoon from the 2000s, the Moonscoop one that nobody watched, that one, it seemed like it was maybe taking its cues from early plans for the original, the 2005 film or something, because in it, like, that's what happens. Doom gets his face screwed up by the accident on the space station where the Fantastic Four get powers, but he doesn't get powers himself. But really, we are now, including the Corman movie, we are now 4-for-4 on Fantastic Four movies with Doctor Doom as the baddie, and they need to stop it.
Yeah,
they're not doing him right.
They can't get it right.
Doom is a final movie cameo. Doom. So like, you fight Annihilus, you beat him, the movie ends. Yay, the Fantastic Four! Look at these new heroes, and then over in some Eastern European country or something, Doom is like, I hate the Fantastic.
So he's the after the credits guy.
Yeah, he's literally like a Thanos or something. He's a guy sitting in a chair that says, "Well, I guess I'll have to do something about this." You know, that's what you do with Doom.
But you can do that because although it's still a bit of a leap that requires some degree of explanation in the next film, you can get from Reed's college buddy and guy who fucked his face up when he was 18. Ruler of Latveria 30 years later, fairly, 30 years, 20 years later, fairly easily. It's not, you know, it works. You can make it work. But the big problem has been connecting Doom into the origins immediately hampers the character whenever you're not going to do any kind of...
It's just that for the people that don't read comics, and their only way to know Dr. Doom is through these horrible movies.
So what they should do... This is what I think they should
actually
do.
Read a comic. Yeah, I know. I keep on telling them that.
Yeah. This is what they should do. You should still have something happen. You should still maybe have some sort of like a pre-build up to the Fantastic Four being created. Don't say it's Doom. Have the accident happen. Don't say it. Don't go back to it. Something shows up at the end of the movie. You don't know if it's the same guy or not. Moviegoers won't. Maybe they won't know. Then the next movie comes out. Then you sort of give a little bit more backstory to lead into it. You make it a surprise. Who is this crazy guy in the middle suit? Oh, that was Reed Richards' buddy. That was the dude that hates him now because of what happened to him. Boom.
Yeah.
That's a free...
I mean, when you get down to it, Who's seen the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie?
I saw most of it.
The Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie is still the best Fantastic Four movie.
Yeah,
unfortunately.
I say that without joking. If it had had a real budget, better actors, and a slightly tighter script, that would have been a perfectly fine Fantastic Four
movie. Am I imagining things, or did the Doom suit look not terrible?
It looked about as not terrible as anything else in that film, but it looked like Doctor Doom. The poor bastard inside it couldn't act for... not that he couldn't act. I mean, he couldn't act through the suit. Mm-hmm. So he had to act with his hands all the way through. There was no face, there was no nothing. And obviously there was no overdubbing, so he literally was talking through the faceplate.
Literally, when you do Doom, though, if you were to do him right, it would have to be a suit, like a mask, where the eyelids are really big, so everything's through the eyes. All the acting comes in through the eyes. You'd have to do that.
It's very hard to know exactly how you would do Doom, because if you're going to bring Doom in, if you're going to do Doom right, you have to bring him in. Your origin is in flashback territory. He comes in later, but that does mean the guy outside of that flashback, the guy spends the entire thing with his face covered, because that's the whole point. You never see the face, so you can't even do. I mean, I think that heads up display style inside the helmet thing that they do for Iron Man is an absolute godsend, because it means you have to keep ripping his helmet off a la Spider-Man every 5 minutes.
But
you can't do that for Doctor Doom.
No, you can't.
It's you got to get somebody like a Hugo Weaving a la V for Vendetta who accepts that the whole point of the character is the face is hidden.
You need a Bane, is what you're saying.
Yeah, you need a Tom Hardy or somebody like that. You know, somebody who's willing to wear the thing all the way through the film.
Yeah, those actors don't want to do that.
The Corman movie, though, it is the one that is most spiritually and emotionally true to the Fantastic Four, and its version of the, it does tie Doom into the origin story, but it does it the right way, where Reed and Doom, the experiment that messes up Doom's face is not, let's be honest, in any modern adaptation of the Doctor Doom story, you're not going to have him mess his face up in a college experiment to contact Hale with a machine.
I want it!
That's not going to happen in a film, but in the Corman movie,
I wanted to find out that in the new version he was playing World of Warcraft to contact his mother in hell. He had all those computer screens with games and stuff on. I was like, oh, he's doing Warcraft to try to contact his mother in hell. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But in the Corman movie, the experiment that messes with him is he and Reed are trying to monitor this cosmic storm, and it goes wrong. The machine blows up in Doom's face, and that's it. And then we jump forward in time, 10, 15 years, whatever. Then we have the proper full Fantastic Four origin whenever the cosmic storm completes its orbit and comes around to be monitored again. The accident happens, they get their powers, and then we get Doom come into the film as ruler of Latveria, which is what he's gone off to be. It is. I mean, it's an embarrassing thing to look at, but the FF fundamentals are really there, and it is the best Fantastic Four movie that's been made, which is really sad.
It just needs the budget. That's the only thing
I mean, I think a lot of it is timing as well, because that was a film that was going to come out in the early to mid 90s when superhero films were still allowed to be big, silly fun.
Well, I mean, before the
movie. Robin ruined it for everybody.
The movie came out. Go ahead. Sorry.
Which one? The Corman movie?
The movie
never came out.
But no. The movie was produced because the guy who had the rights to Fantastic Four had a $30 million movie that he wanted to make. He needed to retain the license by the end of the year, so he made a $1 million movie with Roger Corman.
Yeah. I know, but it's like it's even then it still would have been like it was made in the style of the time. And I mean, I think that's part of the problem with the Tim Story movie is, I have a soft spot for the Story movie. I know they're not great, but I think it was too early.
I think it could have been better, though.
Oh, absolutely.
A couple of things. Because honestly, the thing that they did right was Johnny Storm and Ben Grimm. The interaction was great. I didn't care for the Ben Grimm suit. I think Ben Grimm needs to be a CG. I think it needs to be a CG creation.
Johnny was CG, at least.
Yep. Yeah.
I mean, they're the best bits of the film, certainly. And I mean, but the big problem with those two films is that they just stand around and talk. They don't go anywhere. They don't do anything. They don't explore. There's no sense of imagination or wonder in them. But I still have a soft spot for them nonetheless. But as I say, I think the problem with them is that they came too soon. We were still playing around in the scaled back, black suits, real worldy, downplayed era of superhero films. Spider-Man was there sort of pushing at the edges, playing at the other end of things, being almost a cartoonish sort of film, but we weren't ready for Fantastic Four yet. And then, you know, comparatively, this movie that we've just got now is something that should have come out. It's made to the sort of tone of things that were being made 10 years ago. Bleak, stripped back, gritty. You know, we are in a time, we're in a post-Guardians world. We're ready for bright, colorful, fun, Fantastic Four movies off in space with talking robots and mole men. Yeah. You know? But
we should have had a good Fantastic Four movie. I mean, it's a time where you can accept certain things. I mean, the Vision's in a damn movie, for God's sake.
And, 15 years from now, Disney will make one. So, you know.
Well,
aren't they making an Incredibles 2?
Fantastic Four is poisoned now, though. I mean, it's just.
Yeah. That's why I said 15 years.
I know it's going to have to be at least like 10 years before.
Yeah.
Even if Fox hold their hands up and say, all right, here, even if tomorrow Fox go here, have the rights back. To be honest, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe is right now in more need of the villains than it is of the.
But they need Doom.
And me had a discussion after the movie about basically what we're saying right now. And I think he had a very good point in which if there was a Fantastic Four to exist in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they get it back. They can't make the movie, but they become supporting characters within that universe. Like they exist. Like something may happen in like the joke we made was like something happens and it's like, holy crap, we can't deal with this. We need the smartest man on earth. Everybody looks to Tony Stark and he says, that's not me, that's Reed Richards. And then they just go to them or something. They're there, but they're not like a central movie. They exist within the universe. They become like basically guest stars in other movies.
See, now that you say that, you know, like Reed Richards is supposed to be the smartest man, right, in the Marvel universe. I did not get that from this movie.
No,
I'm just like he's just a regular above average teenager.
He's obviously he can build a dimensional gateway. I mean, so he's a little smarter than above average.
Yeah.
But like, other than his ability to like hyper focus on that and make and build it, he didn't seem like anything more than average. He did not seem like Reed Richards at all.
The cast itself is a pretty fine cast.
Yeah.
It's that their characterization just boils them down to one thing.
The whole thing, like when we were watching the movie and they do the 1 year later thing, and I was thinking, you know, and Reed, he runs, he leaves, and he sort of like leaves them high and dry.
I mean, that's like if the film is off the rails badly enough by that point, like, are you fucking kidding me? I was like,
I was thinking that, all right, at that point, he's not Reed Richards. In my mind, he's not Reed Richards. He leaves. I was thinking, okay, he's going to come back. And he's going to do something like fantastic. He's going to come back and he's going to like, all right, like we're going to get something unexpected. Like he's going to cure Ben or something. Like that would have been kind of interesting if he came back. Then he cured Ben and then like he does something really just with that time. He did nothing with that. What the hell was he? I think he built a suit that he could stretch in. But other than that, like what was he doing while he was gone? Nothing that I can tell.
It's just like they spend an hour building up to the origin, and then they skip over the aftermath of the origin. What is even the point? Like,
it shouldn't have come off as creepy, but what came off as exceptionally creepy was when he had shifted his face.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I think it's like a different to look a little creepy.
It just came off as just odd and kind of out of place.
No, I don't know. I didn't mind it. I mean, he's done it in the comics.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly. And it didn't come off to me like it should have. It was just odd.
I mean, it's funny that you say like he doesn't feel like Reed Richards, because I mean, I think when it gets down to it, the quality of the script of this movie or not, I mean, the simple flaw that this movie made from out of the gate was that it based itself on the Ultimate Comics.
Oh yeah,
the red-headed stepchild of the original Ultimate Comics launch lineup, like. The original forgotten Ultimate book. Nobody ever cared.
Was that Warren Ellis?
Warren Ellis.
That was Bendis, Bendis and Miller, Mark Miller.
The first arc. Yeah,
it was Mark Miller and Bendis making the Fantastic Four. There's
and
your
Warren,
problem.
And Warren Ellis did the follow up.
He did the next
Warren Ellis
couple.
Did the next
he kind of made it a little better. Maybe
a little bit. I mean, he was willing to go weird with it. You know, he was the one who gave us Goat Legs Doom, you know?
Yeah.
Which was such a bad idea that even the Ultimate Comics realized it was a bad idea and started ignoring it after that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the simple flaw, is that it wasn't the Fantastic Four, because it was based on the edgy, modernized, hip teenage version of the Fantastic Four, which is just not what the Fantastic Four are. You can take bits of Ultimate Spider-Man and bits of the Ultimates and put them back into the movies, but you don't lose the essence of the characters. I mean, that's the thing, is like, I think we've said it in the show before, but it's like, when the Ultimates came out, the notion of an Avengers movie was laughable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mark Miller produced what was supposed to be like a big Hollywood blockbuster, edgelord, dark, grim and gritty asshole collection version of the Avengers. And then an actual Avengers movie got made 15 years later. And it turned out, actually, you know, they took the basic idea of the Ultimates, where it's something the government puts together. But beyond that, it's a faithful collection of versions of the characters where they're spiritually true to the comics. And it turns out you don't have to pay a gang of assholes.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I love Captain America. He's pretty much my favorite character, and the fact that he's been treated as respectfully as he has been is just
amazing,
warms
isn't
my heart. Yeah, I love it so much.
I mean, it's so great that the Marvel Cinematic Universe can give us a Captain America who just legitimately does the right thing because it's the right thing to do. It's as simple as that. And then you look at the paragon of virtue that DC should be giving us. And what's coming out of Man of Steel and friggin' Dawn of Justice. Like, you look at the trailer for Dawn of Justice. Clark, you don't know this world anything. You could save him or, you know, fuck him. And what the hell? What is that? Compared to what Marvel are managing to do so honestly and so earnestly, but so without reproach, the way they're doing Captain America. It's not being treated as a joke. It's not being treated as something that other characters make fun of. It's something that people around him look up to him for.
Yeah.
You know,
it's what should be being done with Superman. And it's so great that they're being so spiritually true to the idea of the character.
So a few minutes ago, I mentioned that we sort of grade movies by how much money they made. Captain America made $260 million domestically. Man of Steel made like $70 million more than that. It's kind of funny that we applaud Marvel for doing such a great job when the last DC movie came out, it made mega bucks, but it's like nobody feels that way about it. It feels like it kind of like a failure, even though financially it was very successful.
Critically, it was a bit of a failure.
It's like public opinion can shape. Like,
and I certainly have no doubt that Dawn of Justice is a license to print money, because it's Batman and Superman in a film together for the very first time.
People will go see that. Yeah. I mean, it'll make its money.
So where Fox doesn't have the rights to like any of the action figure stuff for X-Men or Fantastic Four, of course DC can, you know, they of course work with Mattel for the figures. So they're like pumping out figure designs from every single trailer that we see. That desert action Batman is just screaming out. It's just screaming out for a figure.
But they're all terrible, though.
Yes, so they are.
I mean, there hasn't been a good DC friggin' movie tie-in yet, like, because none of these films are for fucking kids.
I hope I get a Batman with snow skis.
Yeah, I honestly do like the look of the base bat suit.
Oh my god, it's the best friggin' bat suit in cinema history. Whatever all else I'm gonna say about that film, holy shit, that's the best looking Batman that has ever stepped out of live action, ever. Oh my god.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the trilogy from Batfleck. Yeah.
I'm actually excited to see Ben Affleck as Batman.
I did for like 5 seconds, then I realized he's pretty much perfect for it, so why not?
It's been a long time since Daredevil. I mean, that film's going to have a lot of problems, but the cast is far from the biggest problem.
Yeah.
Can I go back to something real quick? So we talked about how much we don't like Fantastic Four.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything we liked about Fantastic Four? Can we say anything positive?
Okay, I like the one part when they finally came back and Reed Richards' leg was pulled. I thought that was kind of cool. That's where, about what I'd say.
Where was,
which is like when his leg was actually
he's all stretched
when,
out.
Yeah, when he had to drag himself to Ben or whoever it was.
And I'm like, okay, I kind of like that part.
I think that the effects for the thing were not bad, but if there was a way that the character could be, my character could be in those effects and we could get the emotion with his eyes, because I didn't see much emotion. I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but
no,
there needed to be something else to it, but like at least the effects look pretty good, I think. He needs to pay, he needs some underwear that has a four on it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Does he really, really, really looks naked?
He does.
If there was a bit that I would say I liked, I really have to struggle to find something, you know, to find something I wasn't just bored by. And I didn't like the fact that it was done like semi-drunkenly, but I did like the fact that the mission, that the accident happened because they did so without permission, you know, like the original, like the original rocket launch from the comics, that it was unlicensed, unpermitted, something they'd done to seize the glory.
I like the idea of them transporting somewhere, like you going somewhere else other than like being on a rocket like the 60s. You know,
well,
I think that's a very 60s thing. I like that. I think that if you're going to do like a modern day Fantastic Four movie, I think that's a thing that kind of works. I think make a machine and like it takes them to another world and then, oh God, it screws us up.
I like that Ben carried a Swiss Army knife. I don't like that Reed, who obviously spent all the time building this, didn't know that you had to use the right kind of screwdriver, otherwise you'd strip it, which is obvious that he knew how to do that because he built the damn thing. Wait, we're supposed to talk about stuff I liked.
I don't like the fact that Sue didn't go with them.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But she got some residual energy.
She just wept. I mean, I thought they were going to come back. I figured the way it was going to go was they were going to make it back, but Doom got left behind.
Yeah.
Then they go back for him, and then the accident was going to happen. But no, Sue didn't even go with them.
I was thinking like they were going to get stuck, and then something happened, and then she would have to go after them, and then they all come back, and the accident happens when they're leaving, is what I was thinking. But no.
I don't like how the whole final scene makes no fucking sense.
No!
I mean, okay, we've had it set up that the machine can be used to create a singularity and destroy the Earth. Silliness of that aside, okay, I get it. So then that's what Doom does, right? So why does he have to create big pillars of rock? Why does
to knock him down.
Why does he have to create a big floating ring of rocks? Why does the singularity open in the sky over the planet and then over Earth, instead of on the spot where the teleporter is, since that's where the singularity would be forming? And why does pushing Doom, what is the beam of energy? And why does pushing Doom into the beam of energy cause him to die?
So, like, when he was building the rocks, I was thinking, oh, obviously he's building Latveria and not Negative Zone.
Yeah.
He's building a castle.
Was that final scene all reshoots? It felt like it was.
I really think it was, yes. I mean, I mean, what were Doom's powers?
I don't know.
Whatever he needed.
Being annoying and ugly.
I mean, it was just...
He has the power to kill you with a touch.
Yeah.
He just looks at you.
He popped your head.
Yeah, he got his inner scanner mode.
I think he was a robot.
Well, you know, in the original draft that I was talking about earlier, like the FF destroy his super weapon that's going to destroy Galactus. And it turns out that what they've been fighting is essentially the film's version of a Doombot.
That's what he should be. He should have been a Doombot.
It's not really. It's like it's a projection that Doom is sending into the real world from the Negative Zone. So at the end of this version of the film, like Doom is still in the Negative Zone it's only the simulacrum that's been destroyed.
See, that's like how you could have like Doom in all the Fantastic Four movies. They beat him, and then like it turns out he's a robot.
Yeah,
I never left my castle. They can't prosecute me. I'm still here.
The thing I was talking about this on Twitter shortly before the film came out, I think it was. But when we get to talking about Doom again, the thing is, the Fantastic Four, they don't have the greatest rogues gallery in comics or anything. You know, that honor goes to someone like Batman or Spider-Man.
But what they do, and it's not like Iron Man or something where they started struggling for fucking baddies after the first film, like, you know. But what the Fantastic Four do have that not a lot of other bad guys have, even Batman really, is that pretty much every single one of the Fantastic Four's baddies is powerful enough and smart enough and dangerous enough to carry 2 hours on their own.
Yep.
Without requiring, you know, in particular in Spider-Man's case, multi-villain pileup. I mean, they've done all the, like, Spider-Man's mostly although he's a lot of powers, and you could never do Spider-Man on television because of the budget problems. But Spider-Man would be better suited to television because they've done all his big baddies in films, and you're not gonna get a film out of friggin' Hydro Man.
No, you're not.
You know, or Rhino. Well, so, like, I mean, the Rhino in a film, you know, but you were never going to get a film out of the Rhino on his own or Electro on his own.
Get a Molten Man film, probably, right?
Banff. But with the Fantastic Four, you know, like, their guys have the chops. A lot of them are silly and rubbish, but in that endearing, silly, rubbish Fantastic Four way, you could make a movie where Diablo was the baddie.
Yeah, I was thinking Diablo.
Actually, what I was thinking is, like, they always want to do, like, a trilogy of movies. Well, okay, the Fantastic Four trilogy, Annihilus in the first movie, Doctor Doom in the second movie, Galactus in the
third movie. Boom. Simple as that.
Yeah.
I always said with the story ones, if you're going to do Doom first, okay. But Galactus is not a second movie, prospect. Galactus
is a third movie.
I always said the second story movie should have been Skrulls, just doing the Skrull invasion of not like a secret invasion thing, but like where they, you know, try to invade Earth, you know, and then you put Super Skrull in there as well for the second half of the film, you know, the big final act bad guy. But in the course of the film, it comes out that the Skrulls are trying to take over Earth because their own homeworld has been destroyed, and that sets up Galactus for a third movie.
That's good. That would have been good.
Fucking easy. It's that fucking easy. Like, Fantastic Four has turned my swear feature on. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Really, people, if you want to see entertainment, go and watch Reed McFeely's tweets about it when we got home.
Amazing.
Several bottles of alcohol and came in at midnight and just ripped into it for like an hour and a half.
So did you tweet as long as the movie? Like an hour and 30 minutes?
Close to it, you know. It's just a collection.
I tell you, after watching this movie, I wanted to start drinking.
So, like, am I crazy or not? But did I hear that they are going to move forward with another?
They
said it was canceled a couple days ago.
They can't do another one. I mean, they can't.
They just can't. They would have to have their heads so far in the sand to think that they could do another one. I mean, that's the sad thing, is you look at the characters. The final scene of the film has no bearing on the rest of the film. Most of the time, they don't really have much screen time together. The characters are never all four characters on the screen at the same fucking time in the course of the film, except in the final fight with Doom. So this whole final scene where they're acting like they've accomplished something incredible and they're a team now is nonsense. But still, some dark black part of my heart is like, yeah, now that you've done it, you could do something good with this now.
Whoa, hey, so apparently Fantastic Four just actually debuted in Russia and it made 159.2 million rubles.
Okay.
That's like $2 million.
That's like $5.
$2 million.
So they've made the Corman film twice.
So I'm checking to see if we've got confirmation that it was canceled. People have reported that, but I haven't actually seen like solid evidence, and I'm looking over the news from the last week and I don't see anything solid that it was canceled. So right now it sounds like the plan is still to go with it, which probably will evaporate.
I mean, the thing that really struck me about all the response to it was everyone recognized not simply that it was a bad film, but that it was a bad Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
Even critics who have no understanding of what the comics are or any knowledge of it, even just casual film goers, even they could look at it and go, this is not what a superhero film or a Marvel superhero film being produced in 2015 should be. You know, that's why I say 10 years ago, this would have got a higher score. It would have been good, but it would have got a higher score. But
it's just been utterly rejected outright by everybody on the back of what Marvel Studios have managed to do for superhero films. Everyone knows that this is a bad, bad example of how to do this type of film. And it's heartening in a sense. It truly does hearten me to think that people who don't know the comics are even able to recognize that this is a bad adaptation of those comics.
Apparently, Margot Robbie was offered the role of Sue Storm.
Eh.
Perhaps she made a good decision. She made a good decision. Suicide Squad.
I don't know.
We'll find out when Suicide Squad comes out. See if it's better. It's got to be better. I mean, seriously, it's got to be better, right?
Don't make promises that the film can't keep scripting.
I mean, it's got to be 9%, right? It's got to at least be 9% on Rotten Tomatoes.
A friend of mine watched the trailer for that, and he didn't even realize that it was he didn't catch that it was Suicide Squad from DC because he wasn't that familiar. Because he didn't know that, he didn't recognize that Harley Quinn was Harley Quinn.
Why would you?
He didn't recognize that Jared Leto was the Joker.
But he didn't see Batman on the top of a car and think,
He didn't notice.
Okay. Well, there's a very Batman-looking guy on the top of a car. One scene.
Where have we reached as a fucking society when all it takes to make people think that we've got a good Harley Quinn is to put some pancake on a blonde woman and dye her pigtails blue and red? where have we come? What is wrong with us?
Oh, I got into a geek argument a few weeks ago about Harley Quinn. And I chatted my inner McFeely. There's a bunch of people that I work with, and they have a bunch of Harley Quinn stuff. And this one gal was showing me her phone. She's got Harley Quinn on the front, or on her case, and then she's got the Joker. Oh, and look, I've got her cute little boyfriend on the front. I'm like, the Joker's not her boyfriend. And she's like, what are you talking about? They're always together. I'm like, no, Harley's in love with the Joker. The Joker could care less. And
the Joker
loves himself. The nerd rage was all out.
Well, remember what I said about Deadpool? It's true for Harley Quinn, too.
Oh, like, Harley Quinn.
I like Harley Quinn, but I really hate people who like Harley Quinn.
It's sad that we've got to where they're going to do a cinematic version of Harley Quinn. And it's again like Deadpool. I couldn't care less.
I just
couldn't care less. It's just really sad.
Fundamentally unrecognizable as Harley Quinn.
Harley Quinn has become the comic equivalent of Tinkerbell.
I guess.
That's not a bad comparison. Yeah, she's become this weird little mainstream mascot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
But you try to tell people that the Joker doesn't like Harley. It's unheard of. It's just like, no.
You get that, but then on the flip side, you get people celebrating Harley whenever she realizes that she's been in an abusive relationship and tries to break free and do things independently. And I'm like, well, that's great. Maybe they'd like to tell a two-faced story about where he realizes there's more than two sides to anything. where he doesn't tell riddles anymore, because it's the fucking point of the character. She's a Batman villain. And Batman villains are defined by their mania. And there's this perverse need to turn her into something more than that. Oh, yeah. Remember Clayface Superhero? I remember whenever they did that with him. Yeah. I remember when they did that with friggin' Hugo Strange. Yeah. Remember when he was a superhero? Fuck off.
I want a Two-Face series in which he has a bag of coins for every decision that he makes, and they're all totally different. Today's a pie day on this coin. Today's a shrimp day. Everything's shrimp.
What's a shrimp thing?
I don't. Sorry. Continue.
A shrimp cocktail. Triplet. Oh my gosh.
Maybe it's because I had shrimp the other day.
I don't know, but I can't really get on DC's case too much. I really shouldn't rage at people so much about it, because DC are the ones doing it. DC are the ones who have turned Harley into Deadpool with tits at the minute, and fed that. You know, I mean, Harley is to DC right now and to mainstream media what Deadpool is.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And it's intensely frustrating. I mean, it's like people who romanticize Deadpool. Oh, Wade Wilson's a good man. Wade Wilson would never do that.
No,
Wade Wilson
kills people for money wantonly and joyfully. He's not a superhero. You know, people are like, oh, Deadpool's mentally ill. Isn't it great that there's representation? Oh, he was my great example that people with mental illnesses could go on and do. Deadpool kills people for money. Fuck off.
Yeah.
Deadpool is a guest star in someone else's movie. He's not his own movie.
No, I think Deadpool could be his own movie, legitimately.
I think if it's Deadpool a 30-minute movie.
No, well, that's purely it. I'm not sure about the ability to translate the comedy of the character into a form where it can be sustained for a 2-hour film and not become annoying. But the tragic clown ethos of Joe Kelly's take on the character could absolutely be a film.
Okay. I still think he's a good star in someone else's movie.
Well, they tried that.
I know, and they did it badly.
I never saw that movie, and my life is none the worse.
It's probably a little better.
Yeah. So, anything else, guys? I think we've pretty much covered it thoroughly.
We did the typical fanboy versus things. We start talking. We went off on a couple tangents. We got our McFeely rant. Check, bought a few boxes, and
he didn't do a voice though. McFeely needs to do.
He did. Oh, he did. Yeah. Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
What voice did he do?
What did I do?
You did the voice for. You were doing voices talking to each other, and I can't remember what it was now.
He needs to do the voice of the Thane in the Roger Corman movie. Oh, what a world! What did he say?
It's been long since I saw it.
But no, he did. I just can't remember what it was now.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
He did. I'll have to go back and review.
All right.
Well, so I don't have anything else. Do we want to wrap this up and put a bow on it?
Yeah.
Think so.
I think so.
Somebody else do the ending, because I don't have the heart for it.
Our next one is Suicides. Is it? No, it's Deadpool, isn't it? February.
Deadpool is February.
Yeah.
Unless you want to come back and talk about James Bond in November. I'd be totally fine with that.
You know, why are they saying it's not Blofeld?
You know, there are comics that come out between now and then.
Yeah.
That's true. Maybe
there was this. There is this thing in September called Doctor Who. I don't know if you've heard of it.
What? Come back.
I am going to watch Fear the Walking Dead tonight. I'm joking. We don't have to talk about Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah, I don't want to tell them.
Is that what they've called the new series? Or that is, what is that?
That is the spinoff series, Fear the Walking Dead. Oh, it's Walking Dead in L.A.
Okay.
Oh, God.
I still don't care. I mean, you know, I don't remember if I'd done it by the time we last recorded, but I have watched all of The Flash now.
What'd you think?
I really enjoyed it.
Really cool.
I like it.
I'm trying to get Toby to watch it, but he doesn't want to watch it.
I think it's really quite remarkable what it does. Yeah. The only problem I have with the show is the show's handling of Iris. Iris itself, but the show's handling of Iris.
Which they can fix that in a second season.
Well, they already have. I mean, by the end of the series, they fix it. It's like it's silly because they want to copy Arrow and give him the civilian network of supporters, which results in him telling his friggin' secret identity to every single supporting cast member, except for the love interest, because they also want to do the classic Silver Age, I cannot let the ones I love get close for fear of their own safety thing, which doesn't fly with the way the entire rest of the series is being played. But they fixed that. So really, I'm like, bring it on. I mean, if you're talking about season two and you're going to have Jay Garrick happening, I'm like, yes. Come on, let's go. You know?
They've they have Jesse Quick.
Jesse Quick as well, yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like they're going to do Zoom as well, not Professor
they
Zoom.
And they cast a Wally West, right?
Yeah.
That's right.
I think so, yes.
Kid Flash incoming. Oh, someone's asking in the chat, what about Gotham? And I have watched all of Gotham. Gotham is trash,
but it's fun trash.
Fantastically entertaining trash.
Penguin's fun! I can watch a Penguin show. I am watching a Penguin show.
Yeah, it's Gotham.
I can get past the first couple of episodes.
No, it's garbage. Like, it is hot garbage, but it is like really entertaining garbage. Except for the final episode, which was actually just garbage. And I don't really have any faith in the second season to be any better, but if it can keep up that level of dumbassery. And Fish Mooney, he's like dead now, so good fucking riddance, seriously. So I mean, that is an immediate step up for season two.
Yeah.
She just wandered in from some other show. I don't know what Jada Pinkett Smith thought was going on.
We got Supergirl coming up, and Legends of Tomorrow is coming.
Well, I've not watched the pilot or anything, but I have to say that seems to be hitting all the right notes as well.
What's that, Supergirl?
Yeah, Supergirl, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I haven't either, but it does look awesome.
Seems like the whole tone of that is just very on point. It's clearly for a different audience.
Don will love it.
You know, I'm very happy that it is for that different audience, and yeah, more power to it. I mean, I'm going to watch some of it. At least it may not be for me, but I would be very happy. I mean, just there's that picture going around that's been released this week about, like, it's like her, you know, rescuing a cat surrounded by Girl Scouts all wearing Supergirl t-shirts, and I'm like, this is all right.
Yeah.
This is right. You know, this is what I should be getting out of my Superman. But no, snap a few more necks. It's all good.
Is she supposed to be in a Man of Steel universe, or is she supposed to be in something else universe?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, really. That guy that murdered Metropolis is your cousin? What the hell is wrong with your cousin?
Definitely, Superman definitely exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I'll tell you, I mean, I am having some trouble dealing with intensely handsome, giant, buff-cut Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah. He needs to be really geeky-looking.
Yeah.
I think he does.
Like, obviously he's black, but the race doesn't factor into it. It's the fact that he's this huge buff dude.
He looks like he plays football.
What? I know. And that's what's not right.
Yeah. He needs to be geeky, and he needs to pine for Supergirl and
bow ties.
Bow ties, yeah. Bow ties are back. Come on, bow ties.
Be hipster.
Yeah.
Yeah. Supergirl looks like it'll be great. I thought it was going to be tied to some universe. I don't know why. It would be great.
I think I did hear that recently.
It would be funny if it was tied like to the Lois and Clark universe or something.
There you go.
I believe Dean Cain is playing her dad, isn't he?
Is he? Oh yeah,
Dean Cain's in it. Yeah,
and maybe, and Helen Slater's in it too.
Ah.
And Arrow continues to exist, but I wouldn't know anything about it.
It's not that bad. It's not as good as Flash, but it's not that bad.
I haven't watched Constantine, but I appreciate the fact.
Didn't you hear he beat Stardust at SummerSlam? So
they're gonna wrestle again. It looks like.
Oh God! Seriously? What?
Yeah, one on one.
I was so okay, McFeely. You would appreciate this. I was so disappointed that he had a wrestling match and that the Flash didn't do a run in to help him win the match. Exactly. It's funny.
Yeah.
Well, Stephen Amell seems like a pretty cool dude and all. I like him, but Arrow needs to cheer the fuck up already. When you've got Flash next to it on the friggin' network showing what a superhero TV show can be, Flash is a fucking Gorilla Grodd was on TV this year.
Oh, that was
a
so cool.
Giant, super strong.
I still can't believe they actually did that. That's so awesome.
Any modernization of Grodd, even in a film, he's never going to come from the secret high-tech gorilla city hidden in Africa. So beyond that, like, otherwise, it's a totally undiluted version of Grodd.
It was amazing. Right there. It's incredible.
And then, you know, over in Friggin' Arrow, it's like, well, we can't do Solomon Grundy. What if he was just a strong guy? Would that be... Yeah. So it's like, you know, piss away off.
Well,
it's pretty awesome.
Maybe if Flash could now inch beyond requiring, what's his name? I just want to call him Vibe. What's his name?
Oh, what is his name?
Vibe, but...
He is Vibe, but what's his name?
What's his actual name? I was thinking of him as Vibe.
Shit!
Oh, I just read the comic, too, not long ago. I don't
know. Call him Vibe anyway.
But we'll call him Vibe.
I would like it if we
could. Cisco. His name's Cisco.
If we could move just beyond him having to create the nicknames for everybody.
Yeah.
Given that we now live in a central city where Captain Cold has actually taken the nickname for his own and is owning it, if like maybe just supervillains could start emulating Cold and giving themselves their own names and things, so that it didn't feel like there was still always that slight veil of apologism hanging over the idea that's where code names would have to come from.
Well, maybe that's just a jokey thing for the first season, and then the first episode of the second season, because they've even said, like, you know, people have like already started like giving themselves names, and even said that's not the name I would have given them, and he kind of feels bad or something. I think they did one episode said that, and I think that's a way where you could end it. It's like some guy shows up and says, "Yo, I'm Jay Garrick." Well, that's not the name I would have given you, you know.
I mean, it Flash. Really does look like they're going to do Flash of Two Worlds, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. It looks cool. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Did you see the little promotion that they did, the callback to the cover, where you've got them on the wall? Like, one side is Jay, one side is Barry, and they're running to save the lady, I think. It says, "Flash, help me, I'm coming." You know, they're both doing it at the same time. Yeah.
Man, I hope they do that in the show.
That would be awesome.
Just like an image for the show. That's the sort of thing we need more of.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm really.
It's surprising how few iconic images from comics are recreated in films and TV, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's like that's what you need. You need the cover of Fantastic Four number one recreated or something, you know? You know, I mean, Spider-Man was very good for it. You know, we got Spider-Man No More being recreated, stuff like that. He never got pinned under a very precisely shaped piece of metal, though, or anything like that.
Yeah, oh, that would have been awesome.
Well, wouldn't it, though? Wouldn't it?
Yeah. That's a scene that needs to be in a movie. Maybe the Marvel Sony thing. Yeah.
Get that in there. Besides, like, Spider-Man No More, the actual origin. And I mean, they did a very faithful version of the Bell Tower symbiote scene as well. I mean, that is more so than the symbiote, to be honest. Next to Spider-Man No More, that's probably the single most iconic Spider-Man visual. And we need that in a film, you know. But besides that, it's not like you ever see, say, you know, the cover of Fantastic Four number one, for instance, or what's another famous comic visual?
Silver Surfer number 5, was it that, or the one where Thor is fighting Silver Surfer? Which comic is that?
Well, I'm thinking more of something like Action Comics number 1, or something truly defining. And then, to be fair, Superman Returns actually did that.
Yeah, they did do that, yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, even just like Amazing Fantasy number 15, or
Detective Comics, where Batman's swinging and he's got a dude in his arm. Yeah.
Or, you know, just really famous comics images. Like, that's, give me that stuff.
I want to see the Justice League fight a starfish.
Yeah, I want to see the crystal and conjure up the specter in a crystal ball. Yeah.
And the Silver Surfer number 4. Sorry. So I don't watch any of these shows, so I have no idea what you guys have been talking about for the last 10 minutes.
Watch Flash. Seriously, Brian. Flash is a Flash fan. You don't like the comics. You're not going to read the comics. Watch the damn show.
Is it on Netflix yet?
Not yet, but I don't think it can be far off from being on Netflix.
When it's on Netflix, I'll watch it.
They usually put it on pretty, like, a couple of weeks before it premieres. Mm-hmm. Well,
is season 1 out in DVD or Blu-ray yet?
It comes out next month. Comes out in September.
I think it'll probably maybe be a month or two after that comes out, then that it'll go up on Netflix. But yeah, but Gotham's on Netflix.
Is it?
Oh wait, well, it's on the UK Netflix. I don't know if it's on the US Netflix. But it's
America's. I'm not going to watch it.
It's just a Shield. Both seasons are on Netflix.
I need to watch that.
So if you ever wanted to watch it, Brian, you could watch that.
Yeah, I need to watch it. Kim would actually be interested in watching that too.
Yeah, we didn't talk about the finale of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., did we? It hadn't happened the last time we were on. That was pretty good.
Holy shit! Did you see that? What the hell?
What?
That was all pretty good.
The end of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Very cool. Mr. Hyde, coming out. Yes, all good. Thank you. Lovely.
Yep.
What I've been waiting for. Nice. Secret
Warrior. Great actor to play him.
Kyle MacLachlan, top stuff. Great stuff.
I'm looking forward to the new season.
Yeah.
I saw an ad, Secret Warriors.
Yeah?
Yeah, I saw an ad that specifically said Secret Warriors.
I mean, I think it was obvious that what they were nodding towards even at the end of the previous season. Season 2 finished, season 1 started out a bit wanky and then finished quite strongly. Season 2 kept up the momentum, but it flagged in the third quarter with the two shields thing.
that sort of felt like just sort of spinning the wheels, extending the runtime a bit until they could wrap up the Inhumans and Zabo plot. Yeah. For the finale, but it ended very strongly. Not sure it ended as strongly as it began, but it definitely picked up after a bit of wheel spinning there in the third quarter. So no, I mean, it's definitely evolved far beyond where it seemed like it would be stuck back in the early stages of the series. So yeah, I'm looking forward to what comes next.
And Agent Carter, I'm looking forward to that when it comes back.
Yes, a second season of Agent Carter. I am ready for that.
Oh wait, really?
Yeah.
Yes, that's confirmed. Yep. Yeah, it's going to be in the mid-season between the two halves of Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. again.
So it's not a full series.
I don't think so. It might be more than 8 episodes this time, but it's not a. It's not like 22 or anything. Okay.
I will check that out. Also,
but whatever it is, it's airing on the. It's airing in during S.H.I.E.L.D.'s mid-season break. So
I like that. I hope they can continue to do something like that.
It's a nice plan.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, yeah, it's like, you know, you sort of like. You get like fall through spring with a fairly consistent Marvel TV presence, and then summer hits and the movies happen.
So I think Marvel probably needs to, like, for next year's mid-season break, they probably just need to go ahead and pull together that Nicolas Cage Giant Man series that I've been hearing about.
God.
Okay. So anything else, guys?
Nope.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Nicole, you send us off.
Oh, well, okay. Well, thanks for listening. Join us next time when we'll probably be talking some more movies, hopefully comics between. And we'll catch you next time, I guess.
When it will be Fanboy.
When it'll be Fanboy versus
dot, 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 dot.